This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Go. I'm so nervous.
Me too.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Tina Amini.
Hello, everybody.
Sam Claiborne.
Wow, second billing.
And Tom Marks is joining us this week.
Hello.
So nobody told me Tom was going to be on, so I didn't know.
Surprise.
That I should have brought this bow tie.
This is embarrassing.
It's tie scoop. Well, the embarrassing thing is that I don't know how to tie them.
And then I'm wearing a blue shirt. Yeah, I have one of those little ones too. Little black guy that just like ties on.
Black on black doesn't work very well. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you can't untie Tom.
Just assume it's there.
This is such a fancy show now. We do have a great show for you this week. We are recording this an hour and a half before EA Play, so that's the reason why we won't be talking about Dragon Age or Mass Effect or whatever, Dead Space 4, whatever it is that EA is about to announce.
They announced Mass Effect 4.
No, it's very exciting. We'll talk about that next week. But we do have lots of exciting stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about the way certain games are handling a smart delivery type service on PS5. We're going to talk about some brand new games that have just been announced and that we're playing. But first, Cyberpunk.
Yes.
Perhaps the most anticipated game of the year has been delayed yet again. We are going to be waiting yet another 2 months to play this game, delayed from September 17th to November 19th. And what's interesting about that is that will presumably be right smack dab in the middle of the releases of next-gen consoles, PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. But Tom, I believe on Slack, in our news Slack earlier today, you were thinking that this might mean that the new consoles won't be out by November 19th. Is that right?
Ooh. That was my gut instinct, was that maybe this meant that they felt it was safe to go there because they had been talking to Sony or Microsoft or something. This is entirely speculation. That was my gut instinct. But actually, I think I did come around a little bit on what some other people were saying, which is just that they don't care, right? Like, it probably doesn't have as much of a bearing as my initial instinct had.
Yeah, not to steal our next topic about smart delivery, but they're one of the exceptions, actually, because that's kind of like an opt-in, opt-out feature. So I think they don't care also. I think they're like, we're gonna put this out on the original console as planned, and people will inevitably buy it, and then hopefully they'll just buy it again for an upgrade at some point.
I thought it was really interesting that they said why they're delaying it, and the reason was they wanted to add more naked robots.
Yep.
That's an official statement.
Yeah.
We looked at the whole game. And there are a few naked robots in there, but they thought they could get a few more in there.
Yeah, and then there's plenty of robots that are wearing clothes, and it's just really hard to redesign those robots. They just need to build models from scratch to have them be naked robots.
This is why you need a variety of assets right from the get-go.
Yeah. Variety of asses.
All right.
So I don't know. It's interesting. Like, if this is like a week or two after the release of one or both consoles, it's just like an interesting time. Like Cyberpunk is probably, like I said, the most anticipated game of the year because it's multi-platform. Of course, PlayStation 4 owners are excited about The Last of Us Part 2, but only those gamers are going to be playing that one. So it's like it's conceivable that it could overshadow the release of these new consoles, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if there's nothing, no game of that caliber, you know, but that's
there, we already know. We already know there's Assassin's Creed also. So that's right. Just another there's big that. Thing. It's not as big, but that's like the big reason to play things on next gen. So that exists.
But even Assassin's Creed, Valhalla, like what we've seen of Valhalla so far, doesn't necessarily like blow me away visually or conceptually on the level of like Cyberpunk, right? Like of at least what we've seen of Cyberpunk so far.
No gameplay.
Well, we've seen technically like 2 hours, but it's been at like E3s over the last 3 years.
Assassin's Creed. We've definitely seen Cyberpunk gameplay is awesome. I watched somebody play that with a controller, which is a big difference than what we've seen from Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, so like it's going to be interesting to see, because I think if there was a game that could be in the middle of console launches and sort of still compete with whatever those launch games is, Cyberpunk seems like the game to do it, right? Because even in a console launch year, everyone is still excited for Cyberpunk and everyone is still like anticipating that game.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, even with simultaneous conversations about inevitably like, you know, the speed of this game versus this, or the features or the UI or whatever it is that'll inevitably be part of that initial conversation, the initial launch is always going to be a little bit softer than like well into a console's life cycle, where you're just going to have tons of games and like really see this thing fleshed out. So there will be some conversation, but I imagine a lot of the discourse, capital D, will be around Cyberpunk for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll all be playing Cyberpunk to the point in which we are switching consoles. Like, I know we're going to talk about that as we've all mentioned now, but you know, it'll be interesting the day where I'm like, now my save is going to be on my Xbox. You know, I think that's really cool.
Well, it's better for Xbox than PlayStation, right? Because like, if you've already got your new console, you can play Cyberpunk on your Xbox One because it's backwards compatible. Mm-hmm. But the same won't be true necessarily for PlayStation 5. So it's possible you would have to have both your PS5 and your PS4 set up if you want to play Cyberpunk on PlayStation, right?
I think that's unclear at this point. Is that right?
Yeah, a little bit. They have more of the, as like a company, they have more of the sentiment of, this is the PS5, this is its ecosystem, we want to move forward in this direction, whereas Xbox is going more like an Apple model, where it's like, here's where we are housing all of our all of our software, and you can kind of upgrade as needed, but it's not necessary either. So it's different philosophies.
It's absolutely true. And if CD Projekt wanted to just do whatever they want with their saves, I suppose they could, right? If they just made a system that said like, oh yeah, you can just transfer your save onto PS5, I think we'd be fine there.
Yeah, but I mean, there are games that let you transfer saves from, like, Divinity Original Sin 2 lets you transfer your save from Steam to Switch, right? Like, jump from PS4 to PS5 is certainly conceivable.
Yeah.
That is the weirdest save jump that I could conceive of, actually. So that's been done. That's like cross-play to anything Switch. I'm just like, wow, they allowed that?
Yeah,
seriously.
Well, in any case, we'll learn more about Cyberpunk on June 25th. That's when they're having their Night City Wire event. And then actually IGN will have a preview of Cyberpunk going up immediately afterwards. So please be excited for that.
Yep.
A pre-show and a post-show with at least one familiar face, apparently.
Oh.
Apparently I'm on the pre-show, post-show. Sorry, Tom.
Cool. Yeah. We're covering a lot of Cyberpunk stuff next week. That's the coolest thing. All these purple backgrounds are going to come in handy.
Yeah.
Finally.
It's fitting with the aesthetic. We've been building towards this moment this whole time.
Okay, so speaking of PS5 and the PS5's lack of a smart delivery feature officially, like Xbox has, we found out this week that Madden NFL 21 on PS5 is EA is going to be offering its own equivalent to smart delivery. It's sending an offer to upgrade I guess they're not actually using smart delivery on Xbox One. Basically, they're offering an upgrade from Xbox One or PS4 version of the game to an Xbox Series X or PS5 version if you buy the current gen version of the game before the release of Madden 22 next year. You'll automatically be upgraded to the next gen equivalent version with all the extra enhancements for next gen. And they call this system dual.
You're hurting Tom. You're hurting Tom. Visibly. He's hurting.
They call this system dual entitlement, which is just the perfect name for something for gamers.
That's a joke, people listening, that we're making about ourselves. So don't get mad.
Settle down.
Yeah, I mean, I get that the concept has been like hassle-free, right? Like you're entitled to this game because you've purchased it and it's like within the release scope of a next-gen console. But man, there's so much you have to keep track of and so much at play here. So it's, you know, like you have to think about what is the differentiations between the two consoles in terms of what are Sony's rules, what are Xbox's rules, mm-hmm. which seem to be a little bit more flexible. And then what are like EA's rules that are cooperating with that or not cooperating with that. So it's just so much to keep track of. And EA in particular, like, or rather for Madden, like they have that specific date that like is an additional rule you've got to remember and abide by just mm-hmm. to like know how to use the system.
And another rule is that physical discs can't mm-hmm. be used for upgrade to a discless console.
Yep, exactly. So
if you buy the disc and then you end up getting the digital PlayStation 5, no entitlement.
So we haven't seen if there's going to be a discless version of the Xbox still, because that's still the rumored, unannounced rumored thing. Or even if it's like a lesser system, if it has a disc. But it is funny to see, like, just kind of messaging wise that Xbox learned from that PS4/Xbox One announcement at E3, where, you know, they did all their stuff. They're like, if you want to share, you have to do this, 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 and this, and you can have these groups of people, and, you know, this is your family group, and this is your friend group,
yeah.
And then and PlayStation's like walks on. They're like, this is how you share games. Here's a game, you know. And now, the Xbox did that. They just kind of like Microsoft, like, oh, if you want to play your games on anything, it doesn't matter. A PC, sure, yeah, but just buy it once.
Although considering we've been watching so many speedruns lately because we've been running those as charity streams on Summer of Gaming, I was starting to think like, so on Xbox, it'll automatically detect what console you're on and then load that version of the game digitally. So if you're on the Series X, they'll be able to load that Series X like enhanced version. But like, what if speedrunners don't want enhancements and they get in the way of like certain glitches that they use and they want to specifically run the, you know, less enhanced version, the like Xbox One version? It's interesting. I'm curious to see how that's actually going to unfold.
That's and important that if it has any implications. Speedrunners always exploit things that are patched. So like it's already hard to find probably like, you know, the 1.0.1 version of things that people were like really enjoying speedrunning. And then they patch it. And it's like, unless you have that on a thing that you never update again, you're never going to be able to play it. Like people sort like find copies of Nintendo 64 cartridges with earlier versions of the games on them before things are patched so they can break them more. I know Ocarina of Time is one of those. That's really interesting.
And that happens already a lot in speedrunning too, where like, developers, especially with games that are early access or updated frequently by the developers, the community will keep track of patches, versions of the game that they like because they have a certain bug or they're missing a certain thing. And the community will just sort of, at that point, you know, because you're not really, you're playing the game in such a different way, it doesn't really matter specifically what version you're on, so they just all rally around one version and they say, okay, this is the kind of community picked favorite speedrunning game. So yeah, it'll be interesting with that sort of thing already or auto updating, but they've found ways to get around it this gen, so they'll find ways to get around it next gen, I'm sure.
It's for historians to figure out too, right? Because like each version of a game is like precious, right? You know, like all those things that were patched out could be historically interesting glitches and stuff like that. I think that's really funny and kind of sad. We won't be able to preserve that stuff.
It's interesting to think, you know, someday, many years down the road, game preservation, being able to revisit, you know, a game, revisit all the different patches that were released.
Yeah, and if you think about it this way, the reviews of games that we write are really important, and they're historically important, and they're, you know, you look up Wikipedia, there's an IGN score, it says who reviewed it, all that stuff. That review of that product is instantly outdated when there's a major update or something like that. So like, unless we re-review something, there's a disconnect there. So there's this, there the historical record of how things were viewed when they are out, and then maybe how you could like dip back in and play a game are like not there. There's no parity there. I think that's really interesting. And man, if you was in college right now, that's what I'd study.
Cool. Anyway, there's very few games that are sort of making this commitment for PlayStation gamers, where, you know, this dual entitlement thing. I think Destiny 2 is an exception. So it'll be interesting to see if more and more publishers sort of come up with their own fix for this, since Sony isn't providing just an overall blanket backwards compatibility. Last week on the show, we were talking about the PS5 showcase last week, and we talked briefly about how I thought it was a little bit odd that they opened up their future of gaming show with GTA 5. and of course, they introduced a program where I think every month PS4 gamers are getting like $1 million of in-game currency in GTA 5 online until the launch of the PS5 version of GTA 5 in 2021. And PS Plus subscribers will also get GTA online for free for PS5 when that's ready. Anyway, gamesindustry.biz ran an op-ed this week claiming that GTA 5 is actually the PS5's killer app. And I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. Of course, GTA 5, one of the biggest pieces of entertainment ever produced by human beings. And the op-ed on gamesindustry.biz said, PlayStation has immediately made a play for the GTA audience, and it's doing it in two stages. The first is making a significant amount of in-game currency available to PS4 owners every month until the PS5 version of the game launches in 2021. Then once that offer ends, PS5 owners are able to claim a free version of Grand Theft Auto Online, as long as they do so within the first 3 months of launch. It's a crucial move in Sony's mission to get players to upgrade to its new console quickly. So I thought that was actually pretty interesting. It's like,
yeah,
there's no game bigger than GTA 5, and you have like a little bit of an incentive to get your PS5, purchase it within the first 3 months that it's available.
Mm-hmm. Catch up to the online community, because that's one of the most obnoxious things possible, is to like enter in, you're just getting your bearings, even though there is like an opening world level to that game. But regardless, it's like it does help the incentive there too, to where you would be able to catch up reasonably so you actually want to maybe play the game. But yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's a fair point. It's not super exciting for us because we're constantly watching the news, so it's not the most exciting announcement. It's like, oh, Skyrim's on another platform. Like, great. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Played that game for 100 hours already. Like, not expecting to play it again on my Switch. But I think there's probably like a bigger, more mainstream audience where it is appealing if they're going to get a new console. Like, I think about my brothers. They don't play all the time. But if they can play GTA 5, if they haven't before, why not get it on PS5?
Well, also my mind jumps to the people who only really play GTA Online, right? Where if that's their only game, just saying, hey, if you get a PS5, you just get it, right? You don't have to rebuy this thing. You can just bring it on over is really significant, because if you're just only playing that game, then the barrier of entry is, it's not lowered by a ton of money, but it's just lower. Yeah. It's just saying, this will be here for you when you come.
I think maybe Sony knows something that we don't about how many people play GTA online on their platform. We see how many people play GTA online. It's a huge community. It's not one that's discussed as much as, say, Fortnite or, when PUBG was bigger and Call of Duty and stuff like that. But man, it's massive and it's cross-platform. But not all those communities are on PlayStation. And I wonder if the PlayStation 4's like go-to big gaming community that just has constant people on it is, it might just be GTA 5.
Yeah.
So that's their move.
Yeah, that's like an inherent player base. Why not scoop that up before anyone else does?
Yeah. I know my GTA 5 codes on a PlayStation controller innately, but I don't know them on an Xbox controller.
That's what did it. That was what the final signature went down, knowing that information.
Yeah. And we've mentioned this several times on the show, but if it happens to be a slow news day for IGN, then the GTA 5 cheats and wikis page will be the most popular thing on IGN on any given slow news day.
Only for 5 years now.
Yeah, only for 5 years now. I love this last paragraph of this gamesindustry.biz article. Was very interesting. It said, in an industry where games have become their own ecosystems, this generational shift will prove more complicated than before. You're not just asking gamers to put down the consoles they've been playing, but the games they've been living in too. As a result, we should expect the big console games of tomorrow to look an awful lot like the big console games of yesterday. It's interesting to think that as games as a service, if they just sort of end up spanning console generations, you know, if GTA 5 and Fortnite and Apex Legends are the most popular games on PlayStation 4 today, Destiny 2, will they also be the most popular games on PlayStation 5? It's just interesting to think about.
Yeah, that was the big debate around Destiny 1 to Destiny 2, where a lot of people didn't want to make like a sequel progression because it's like, well, I've been existing in this game. Can't you just support this game? And I think Bungie probably thinks about things a little differently now as they're thinking about Destiny 2. So it's kind of like, as exactly as the Game Industry Biz article says, it's like taking that ecosystem and moving it forward. Like, I imagine when I used to be hardcore into World of Warcraft, what if like I had to upgrade my PC, but they're like, sorry, you know, here's World of Warcraft 2. It's like, I don't know if I want to, you know, reset all that. Maybe I'll just have my older PC over here and still play this game where I've formulated a guild and like I have a built up player, a built up character or two or three. So why would I make that transition if I'm not ready to?
The exact like worst case scenario happened to Xbox last time where they didn't make it possible to move your Halo 2, Halo 3 communities between those systems. Like, they had the biggest online multiplayer game sometimes with the Halo games, and they did that. They did, like, Halo, you know, 4 or 5, you know, like, instead of doing, and back then they did ODST and Reach and all this other stuff. Yeah. Like, they never made it easy for that community to stay in one place and just play forever. Mm. And whether it was across consoles or across discs, and now, like, Halo's not the big multiplayer game. Like, I would have never predicted that 10 years ago. I would have thought like Halo's never going away because it's still just so fun and so perfect as an online game. It fractured the community every way that it could.
Yeah. That's why I'm interested to see if Halo Infinite can be like a system seller for the Series X. Cause you're right. It just isn't the, you know, popular shooter that it used to be, you know.
Here's what they need to do. They put it out now on Xbox. One, right? And then they give you a bunch of GTA money for the next 4 months.
Yep.
And then you're going to, you know, clearly be able to have fun playing that when it comes out.
All roads lead back to GTA 5.
GTA money. GTA money.
That's true. Okay, moving on. We got confirmation this week that the last remaining video game event of the year that hadn't been canceled, PAX West, is now officially canceled. Not a big surprise. Everyone expected that. I'm not sure why they waited so long. But that's it. Now there are no more. There's no Gamescom. There's no TGS. There are no more video game live events in 2020. Instead, PAX West is being replaced with PAX Online, which I think is 9 days long. I think that sounds pretty crazy.
Well, as we just put out like a month long.
Yeah.
I feel like that's nothing.
Yeah, I don't know if PAX... if the PAX organization knows what they're getting into. 9 days of live content. And I know not, you know, not everyone goes to PAX, but I think it's significant because 60,000 people do go to PAX and they get hands-on with some of the biggest upcoming games. Like, it could have been Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And then they go out into the world and they evangelize. They do the marketing for a lot of these publishers, and they tell people about what they played and what they like. So,
yeah, but you're just giving a big metaphor for viral spread right now, too.
Well, that's actually true. They also would do that.
There's literally they called it the PAX Pox, right?
Yeah.
Is like the sickness you'd catch from going to the show. This is also funny to me, just because it's the last one. It's the last domino to fall, but it was also the last domino standing because PAX East was like the final big event that happened before everything started shutting down.
We were there, Sam and Tina.
Yeah.
And they had really good hand sanitizer stations everywhere, and people did a pretty good job. That was before anybody was wearing masks or anything, though. Like, was like everybody was surface-based concern.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and considering all this broke out technically in like November, December, I'm shocked that something more didn't come out of that event. Very fortunate, obviously, that nothing happened to us too, but... Yeah. I do distinctly remember that being like the last trip I took in general, but the last like big like in-person event that we attended to. So I remember it wistfully.
Stuff too.
That's probably true. Yeah, one of the last few restaurant outings.
Things hit so quickly right after PAX. This year's PAX, so it's 9 days of live programming. I think that us four can fill
free.
One of those days.
It's free.
Can we still get a GameScoop?
That's the big point. Yeah.
Can we still get a GameScoop panel?
All day? I think we can. Yeah. We'll see.
Okay. We'll try to get a GameScoop panel on.
There you go. I do like that. Okay. So the benefits, the silver lining to this is that it has a better global reach because a lot of people, you know, for a variety of reasons can't attend one of these events, whether it's cost, whether it's a, you know, country to country visa, whatever restrictions. So it effectively makes it a little bit more global and lifts the restrictions from having to pay for the event too. And then being limited by passes. So gone are scalpers. And you know, people more people can participate now instead of, because if anyone's ever tried to buy a PAX pass, it's like gone in 30 seconds. It's very first come, first serve and out very quickly. So that part is kind of nice.
Yeah, if we were to have gone this year, the one thing that I will miss above all was the cool vintage shops and how there was like cool old games to buy everywhere. And we had a really fun day going from shop to shop and we all picked up some cool stuff, which is just sitting in the office unplayed because I was like on the toy pile.
That's
when
true.
We all scattered.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay, so tell me, I want to know what your gut tells you. PAX East 2021 is currently supposed to kick off on March 25th.
March.
Will that happen?
I say it's not going to happen.
Really?
Yeah.
Three months into 2021.
So initial projections were like, okay, 2021 is going to be when things start to open up again. But man, did we throw that out the window and got very tired of quarantine and decided, to start abandoning that. Obviously some of the reasoning behind that being very legitimate, in terms of the economy and impact there, but, it's definitely going to delay, in terms of like, we're going to have to go through that all over again once that spreads. And I'm in Texas currently, where we've shot up in the last few weeks quite a bit in terms of cases. So I have to imagine we're going through this, all over again in a few months.
Yeah. And we don't need to dwell on this, but, I do think people are going to be very, very resistant to going on lockdown again. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
That's true. Yeah, it's totally dependent on organizers if they want to kind of follow suit there. I think it would be, I feel like I'm projecting that in that time frame, that's going to be what the responsible thing to do is. But we all haven't been necessarily behaving responsibly with it. So who knows what the decisions will be.
Well, we'll see if PAX East 2021 ends up being canceled.
It's too cold anyway. I mean,
it is very cold. Yeah.
Yeah. Seattle.
Yeah. Let's do PAX East in Seattle. Then I consider.
And then PAX West in Boston.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But this is smart delivery fine print levels now.
We could just do PAX East in Kansas City because it is east of California.
There you go. Yeah.
And Kansas City is nice in March.
Plus, nice you could do PAX East in Kansas City, Missouri, and PAX West in Kansas City, Kansas.
Exactly.
Did I get that right? Exactly. I got that right.
Yep, yes. That's right. Okay.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the U.S. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. Okay. In happier news, Tom, I know you follow a lot of indie games. Have you your eye on Carrion?
Yeah, that game looks wild.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that game. And we just got confirmation this week that it is coming to Switch along with PC and Xbox. No PS4 version announced at this time, which is a little odd. But that game looks awesome. This is the reverse horror game. This is the official description of Carrion.
Did you come up with reverse horror?
No, I said okay. This is the official. A reverse horror game in which you assume the role of an amorphous creature of unknown origins, stalking and consuming those that imprisoned you. And I have a very Damey feeling about this one.
Damey feeling about it, too. It looks fun. And it's reverse horror because you're the monster. So it makes sense.
Yeah, you're like this horrible Cronenbergian mass of meat just like consuming people. It's really terrifying.
Yeah, it's like
it's too late now for this joke, but I'm going to say it anyway. But I was going to say, like, I'm really glad to see that Nintendo's really supporting the family friendly experience, just given like their last few conferences.
Is it too soon for this joke? Is this just Inside played backwards?
I was thinking that too.
Spoilers, jeez.
Yeah,
too soon for this joke. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, well, to be fair, with the collector's edition stuff. Right. You know, being a thing, not to spoil it more, but I was totally thinking the same thing. It's like a sequel. It picks up after.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so then we know it's not of unknown origins at all. We know exactly what
that's true.
I like how it's not just like, you know, gore hound stuff for you, Damon, but it's also pixelated. It's like it's a really cool art style too.
Yeah.
What do you do in it? Is it like a Metroidvania, or is it like exploration based, or is it just killing stuff? Is it
I think you have to, like, you know, find your way out of this laboratory or whatever, but I think you're growing as you're consuming people.
Snake.
Yeah. And then also if you get like
snake?
Hit.
Snake.
Yeah, basically.
The classic game. Yeah. You know, snake. You play as a snake, you eat pepper.
Programming meat through hallways. It gets longer and longer.
It really does look like that, because you're like navigating through these like pathways and you're effectively eating things along the way, and you do grow. So, yeah.
You go from a hamburger to a sausage then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. In meat terminology. What were you going to say, Tom?
No, it's just like I was going to compare it functionally, and I don't think exactly structurally like this, but like Katana Zero, if you guys played that.
Yeah.
It's a similar sort of gameplay loop of like, here's a room full of enemies, figure out how to navigate it without getting torn apart, except you're not like one hit kill. So it's slightly different, but it's a similar sort of like core.
And it you're doing the tearing apart.
Yes.
It reminds me of Super Meat Boy. Super Meat Boy is the Lego version, and this is the Duplo version.
It's basically the gritty reboot of Super Meat Boy.
Yep.
But and then, so speaking of Nintendo Switch, but something that is definitely not a gory, gritty reboot of anything is Jump Rope Challenge, which was released this week for free. And Sam's response was, "Thanks, I hate it."
Yeah. Well, okay. Why? Well, first of all, it is gritty. I love bunnies. That's planned. I love bunnies. And it's you know, if you jump 100 times on the first day, it shows a photo of a cat. That's your reward.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, this, look at this cool drawing that somebody did. It's just a clip art photo of a really cute gray and white cat.
Yeah.
And it just appears there and nothing else happens. You jump 100 times, cat appears. See you tomorrow.
What's there to hate?
The game.
Yeah. Well, seems like a good goal. Motivating goal.
Look, I enjoy the sport and the exercise, but I don't really know how to jump rope. I mean, I do from like being a little kid, but like, I don't know how to jump rope with an invisible jump rope, and it makes no sense. Like the bunny's just hopping up and down and making noises. And I'm like, I don't think the invisible jump rope went under me yet. I don't know where my hands are supposed to be, where the rope is. Cause it's kind of like disconnect. It's so confusing. But what's bad about it is that after jumping 100 times on your house, you just feel terrible.
I think that's the point.
Because you got exercise?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different type of exercise. It's this kind of like bummer I just jumped 100 times in my house exercise.
Go outside. You can do it right outside on your front porch.
That's true.
What was the switch? I could go on the roof of my friend's apartment and they could all crowd around and watch me do it.
Yeah.
Like yeah, you could be the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then you can put up a YouTube tutorial of how to jump rope right next to it. So maybe you would advance your game as you go on.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I want my money back. Also, I think
your
it's
free really money.
Yeah, I think it's really funny that that they're putting out games just for Switch owners because the Switch Lite has been like that's all that's been available for like 3 months now.
Yeah.
Ironically, this is a game you can't play with the Switch Lite. So there you go.
Yeah, you need those Joy-Cons.
And you can't play with a Pro Controller either. It specifies.
Well, I imagine so.
It's an imaginary jump rope. Who cares?
Motion controls.
The bunny could just say jump 100 times, and then you'd be fine playing it. They're still terrible. They have not fixed motion controls. They're so bad. Seriously, this bunny is like half jumping. I'm like, I swear, I was really thinking in my brain, okay, invisible jump rope's coming down right now, and then it's when I jump. I try to get in the flow, and the bunny's just like, boop.
Okay, so for next week's episode, you need to just take the Joy-Con while you're sitting and just rotate it around in your hand and see what happens if you can game the system. See how to test those motion controls properly and then give us a report.
I mean, yeah. I could just be doing it right now. I could be getting my exercise right now in GameScoop and then I don't have to do it later. When the Nintendo came out, I got mine with the power pad, which was a big sheet of plastic that you put on the ground and you play a game called World Class Track Meet. And you two people could get on this big sheet of plastic and there's big buttons on it for your feet. So you could run in place. And when you ran in place, your character would go fast and then you'd like jump and then your character would jump because it would know there's no feet there. So you could do this thing, but immediately what you did, that was, you know, Christmas morning or whatever, on the Boxing Day after Christmas, that's a shout out to CJ, that's a Canada reference, you could just get on your knees and hit it with your hands like this. And you'd go so fast.
And that's where they came up with the idea for Donkey Konga, I think.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. True.
Also good exercise.
I do like that people are thinking about games that are fitting in the quarantine, though. That part's nice. Feels relevant. Feels like they're thinking of people.
This is the game
at the same time.
Oh yeah, the Pokemon Smile. This jump rope game is so funny to me because this is a like first party Nintendo game, right? Like this is some Nintendo developers who were just like trapped at home and wanted to make something for funsies, and they gave it away for free. Like it's so weird and quirky that is a thing that Nintendo is. So like is suddenly cool with putting out where I see them as such a reserved company traditionally. And now they're just like, nah, sure. Free kind of slapdash, but great little jump rope game.
Not that there's much risk in like cute artsy little bunnies though. That's right, in line with Nintendo.
I'm hoping that there's some like really in-depth, you know, crazy thing that starts developing in this game. So it's like, you know, after like you do this for long enough, all of a sudden there's like some other mini game that opens up, and then all of a sudden you're in some kind of dungeon and your bunny's trapped, and then like you have to go save the bunny. Like that's what I'm hoping for, but I suspect tomorrow will be a puppy picture.
This is the prequel to Carrie, what you want.
Yeah, exactly. This is the origin story. It gets real dark in the end there, but you're fit at the same time, so it's okay.
Yeah, if tomorrow the image they unlock is a clip art of like raw meat, we'll know.
There you go. It's evolving into Super Meat Boy.
So we know Paper Mario is coming up in a month.
Woo!
But other than that, Nintendo has been very quiet, which is strange for the month when E3 happens.
You're blocking out Pokemon announcements again. You always do this.
There's Pokemon Snap.
Okay, there we go. You heard about it. You heard about it. Okay.
That's fine. It's fine.
It's a big deal game.
Okay. But I just wonder, like, what? So, like, if if E3 had happened, what would Nintendo have been showing? Would it have been Pokemon Snap?
Yes.
I thought it would have been
That would have been their big game. That's it?
No, I don't think it's their big game. I think it were like every 2 days they're revealing a game now. So they
If E3 had happened, we would have already gotten the ARMS character for Smash Bros. Would have been out. We would have gotten the Pokemon Snap announcement there. We would have gotten the Paper Mario announcement there. And probably more. We probably would have seen Breath of the Wild 2 or whatever that is, right?
The bunnies would have been released for Smash as well, right? The jumping bunnies.
Sure, sure.
We would have seen presumably a giant Mario celebration thing, which I'm sure would have been the theme of their booth, if not Pokemon Snap. If Pokemon Snap was the theme of their booth, that would have been really cool.
Yeah, but to be fair, they did have some of that stuff leak, so it has, I think, some to do with that too, where some of that was spoiled earlier than they intended.
Yeah, where are these Mario remasters? Are they
That's
real?
A great question.
Is this
I hope they're not on 3DS.
I bet you have to. Yeah, I bet you unlock them with jump rope challenge. If you jump like enough days in a row, it unlocks the Mario remasters.
I'm gonna just keep talking about Pokemon. In the background of the video, they had they showed the Gold and Silver era Pokemon all lined up, and so the theory is that there's also a Let's Go for Gold and Silver. That Let's Go is that kind of the remake of the first game that they did a couple years ago. Is the first Switch Pokemon game. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm.
So they might have had that too. Like, I just want like a direct that's the bigger replacement of the E3 direct, but I don't know if we're gonna get that.
Yeah, there hasn't been anything this month, like I said.
To be fair, a lot of publishers have pushed some of their stuff out, like Ubisoft, for instance, to July. So I think we need to wait until July and see if Nintendo does anything bigger then before we completely count them out from like the E3 recovery showcase stuff. Yeah.
I think they have a huge amount of really cool games this fall. Like, they just always do. That's like the nature of Switch right now. I just can't wait to hear about them.
Same. Okay, let's talk about what we've been playing. And I believe at least Sam and Tina have been playing a hot new video game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Tom has been playing as well.
Teloto.
Are
you playing, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay. Game that we all need right now, a real feel-good romp through a murderous post-apocalyptic quarantine zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
it's
real.
It's brutal, man. It's not a good feeling game, and it's not meant to be, and that's fine. I think that's a good thing for people that are looking for that. It's like Breaking Bad. It's like really, really cool, high-quality drama, and there's a lot to it, and I can't wait to go play it again, but I also like have to look away a lot, and I also don't like any of the characters.
I don't think I'm as far as Sam is, so I'm a little bit earlier on, and honestly it was because I think it's because like I first picked it up and I could really only play for 5 minutes before I was like, I'm really not in the mood for this right now. Like, post long day at work and dealing, you know, with the realities of the world and whatnot, you kind of want a reprieve and a breather. So like, frankly, something like SpongeBob Rehydrated is like top of mind because it's like goofy and fun and you can kind of let off some steam with that, as opposed to The Last of Us, where I'm a heavy stealth player. I mean, I think predominantly you're supposed to play stealth, but I like obsessively play that way. Like, I'll reload if I disturb a clicker accidentally. I don't want to waste ammunition, you know?
Yep.
So that makes it so tense. So even if it has nothing to do with the quarantine and has nothing to do with the circumstances of this post-apocalyptic narrative element, like, even if that stuff doesn't bug you, it's just the concept of sitting and kind of like breathing heavier while you're waiting to go around corners. And then you've like accidentally miscalculated one of the clicker routes and you get into contact with them. So it's like heavy moments like that. So I've been churning through it slowly, but so far it's been a lot of The Last of Us plus some jumping and some new characters.
That's exactly right. I'm about 20 hours in. I played like one 14 hour day. I've been playing a couple hours after work every day, so I'm really far, and it's all those things. I want to say some good things about it. Naughty Dog is like an unbelievable studio. The craftsmanship that goes into things that they care about. There's like a guitar in the game that you pick up from time to time and you can play chords in it, and like the fingering is unbelievable. Like, each string is bent and the chords are perfect, and then you can strum by hitting the pad on the controller, and like the picking sounds like that kind of stuff is amazing. Every face, every hand, every blade of grass, every like, you know, moss covered old car is like so cool in that game. You go to places that are like things you would like to see in the post-apocalypse that are overgrown, because they'll be beautiful then. Like, you know, I don't want to say any of them, but you get to see stuff like that a lot. So that's the good thing that they have. The gameplay side of it is the good parts are exactly what Tina's talking about. They're tense, you know, sneaking around parts that you want to reset and get just right. Like, I love that stuff in games. But again, like, it's not the best time for me to be playing that right now, because then at the end of that, there's like a lot of neck stabbing and shouting. But there's an element to this game which I also is kind of in the past, and that's that you're doing a lot of triangle searches where all you're doing in a giant beautiful area is kind of going up against invisible walls and trying to find the triangle that allows you to hit the triangle button and then climb up to something, or hit the triangle button and lift something, or hit the triangle button and interact with the environment. So it's like where the climb everything stuff that we're talking about is saying like, oh, you can build an amazing environment, an amazing game, and then you can climb everything and explore. This is not what that is. This is like these channels that you go through, and it's, you know, at the end of them is narrative, and during them is cool dialogue and stuff like that. It's just such a weird, it's just Uncharted still. Like, it's crazy to be playing Uncharted still, but like super serious and really pretty. And I don't know. It's just like, it's such a weird game. I'm so impressed though. Like, I mean, if people making games right now or graphics alone, it's incomparable. They're just amazing.
Two quick things about that. One, at the very least for loot, they give you a little bit of a heads up earlier than, like, you don't have to be pressed up against a cabinet to know that you can open for loot. Like, they'll signal you a little bit earlier. So I appreciate not having to obsessively go to every corner looking for loot, because I'll do that anyway. Yeah, exactly. I make sure I loop around 1,000 times and people are like, what are you doing? Can we get along now? And I'm like, no, I must search every corner. But the second thing was what you just touched on in terms of there being dialogue. So while you do have to look around for like, where's the ladder, where can I jump to? A, they're meant to be a little bit more puzzle oriented as far as I've seen so far, which is neat. I don't know that it's necessarily smart yet. Jonathan in our official review loved the environmental puzzle stuff. So I think I just need to like develop a little bit more in the gameplay to see some of the extended stuff as like we get through the tutorial areas, or as I get through the tutorial areas. But in the midst of all of that is that classic original Last of Us element of, okay, we're going to carry you through those gameplay moments that normally would be quiet with really interesting dialogue that extends the story, extends your relationship with people, extends your understanding of even yourself as your own character too. So I like that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's what Naughty Dog's good at.
Tom, do you plan on playing The Last of Us Part Two?
Yes, I actually played through the first one for the first time about a month ago, a little over a month ago, in anticipation of this. And it's funny hearing you guys talking about it, because I'm excited to play it, and all the stuff about like it being hard to play through and not like an enjoyable thing, even if it's like, or not fun outright, is like exactly why I didn't play The Last of Us 1 when it first came out. When Last of Us 1 first came out, I played probably like 3 hours of it, and I was like, this is just making me sad, and I just like stopped playing it as a result. So like, yeah, I'm excited to go to the second one, and I'm kind of have my expectations set that that's what it's already going to be. Not that you guys didn't, just saying like I know what I'm getting into, I guess, and I'm like, I'm looking forward to that sort of experience.
Yeah. I have to think about this a lot. Like, again, Breaking Bad is my best example from last year, but a movie has to hit like a really high level of people saying like, you have to see this in the theater for me to go see like a dramatic movie in the theater versus a sci-fi movie or a comedy or something, because it's that full experience. I don't know. I'd rather take that in. And I like reading. I like doing that in novel form a lot more, but like something about some things that are dramatic, have lots of violence and take themselves really seriously are like, they're not supposed to be fun, but I also don't need to consume them. Like, I can just skip that. And I don't feel that way about this game, because the craftsmanship, like Breaking Bad, is so, so high level. And I just kind of want to see what people can make in games. And this is a showcase for like what the best developers on Earth can make right now. So I just want to see that. And it's totally worth the journey for that.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out. I'm in a little bit of a Pickle, because I never finished the first one and I need to figure out the best way to prepare myself for two. Like, do I just read the plot synopsis? Do I watch the cutscenes? I don't know.
Do you have a save?
Because I played it on my PS4, but like, just realistically, I'm not going to like finish that first, you know.
Fair enough. It's such a good game, though.
Yeah.
This game does a recap of it really creative way later in the game. And so the standalone, you're going to be like, who are these characters? Why does this matter? But there are also lots of new faces and people that are introduced. When you play through this, it explains why people are mad at each other, because you didn't know that even in the last game. So like, that's the point of this game, is kind of exploring a new set of people's concerns. But there's like this like kind of heavy, maybe one important thing you can get out of a Wikipedia synopsis of the first game that should be good.
My God, strong pass to Wikipedia synopsis. At the very least, like, watch cinematics, because there are a couple moments that you have to experience to like really appreciate. I was about to spoil it for Damon, but I think you can probably find on YouTube. Like, we had this question from a listener one episode about, like, you know, would you ever watch a game on YouTube instead of playing it yourself? I think this is one of those instances where that's appropriate. And if you can find a highlight reel and just kind of skip through to those big story moments and those big like emotional moments, it'll help you appreciate or be able to be more critical as a, you know, critical editor, writer, whatever. With your opinions in two when you're feeling that stuff out too. So I would do that if I were you.
To the back like three chapters, because there is a really famous moment outside of the last area that's really cool, and then like it goes into the stuff that you need to know. So that would be cool. I don't know how you would do that. So maybe you can start watching from the end of there.
We should have done an in 5 minutes for the last one.
Yeah, but even that wouldn't do it justice. Like, you need to look up, maybe we need to do a quick summarization through, okay, watch these five scenes or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
And if you don't do any of that, I, because I've played this game for a long time, they absolutely recap it. It's just, you have to wait a while for that to happen.
Okay.
So you are okay.
Good to know.
So you get it previously on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and like several different really cool like video gamey ways. So they do a good job of that.
We got an email that is sort of tangentially related to all this. So let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners!
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like Chris in Cardiff, Wales did. And he says, I've recently been playing my Mega Drive Mini while my son has been finishing Spider-Man on the PS4. My observation is that games seem to make much more of the story these days than when I was a kid. While the stories told by games such as Spider-Man are very polished, to me, it is at a loss to the gameplay. The games I played on consoles, such as the Mega Drive, had a narrative, but often it made no sense, and I didn't care. However, the gameplay was often excellent. These days, I feel I have to invest in the story being told, as it's such a heavy part of the game, or the game becomes a bore. Do you think games are now becoming more like interactive stories rather than video games? And if so, do you think this is the right way the industry should continue to move?
I'm like personally so much a fan of storytelling and fantasy. So I like that those are now incorporated in a thing I've always enjoyed being like an active participant of. So yeah, like if the gameplay has to be key, because I'm not going to carry on through a really boring game just to see the story out, like that's when I'd go back to the YouTube route in that case. But I think it's nice that we have an evolution of both of those elements, and I think there are games like the Batman series, for instance, where you have a bit of both. Like I love like the graceful choreographed combat, so the gameplay is really solid, but it still felt like here's a development of characters and here are some stories and here are some like moral ambiguities for you to ponder. Like I think that stuff adds to the shelf life of a game, where if I play a platformer with no storyline and it's like a really solid, concise platforming experience, that's one thing that I'll remember the feelings of in that moment. And maybe, you know, I'm playing with a friend nearby, and so I have like memories of that experience. But if it's a story that I can dissect and think about later and bring as discussions with friends and on podcasts afterwards, that's the kind of thing that kind of extends its shelf life for me on a personal level.
I'd also say, because I agree with all that, but I'd also say that like, I don't necessarily know if the right way to say it is that games are now all about story. I think it's that games, like, I don't think story games have replaced gameplay focused games. I think they're, that part of gaming has blossomed a lot bigger than it used to be, but there's still plenty of games out there that you can find that are just focused on giving you a really fun time and not really worried about the story. Like a notable example in my mind is like Sea of Thieves doesn't really like bog you down with plot. It's really just about going out and being on a pirate ship with friends, right? So there's, I think those still exist. It's just that the story games are the ones that you hear a lot about because I think it resonates with a lot of people. And if it doesn't resonate with you, that's totally fine. It's just like, they're the big budget ones that are getting a lot of kind of publicity a lot of the time because you have famous people in them for some reasons.
That's true. It's like AAA level production almost automatically necessitates mocap and like professional actors in those scenario, in those mocap scenarios. So it's just like the expectation has changed for sure. But something like Carry On, I imagine, won't have the most in-depth story, and that it will live on and live or die based on its gameplay.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with a lot of what both of you were saying. I think games have gotten a lot better at telling stories, and there are certain types of games that lean heavily on story, but then like there's no shortage of just games that are just pure gameplay today, like Dead Cells, Celeste, Slay the Spire, Mario Kart, you know, this is
Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
It's true. They didn't care about the story in Breath of the Wild. I know you guys think that was like a, like there's people out there that are like, oh, but you got to wrestle the princess. And like, yeah, come on. That game was about exploration. I want something mean about games that is that they just want to be like movies. And that's not good enough. Like the games need to be their own thing. And they need to like, you know, figure out what makes it a game, like what makes storytelling better by the nature of a game being a game. And only a few games figured that out. Portal 2 is the best example I can possibly think of. I think it's really cool to employ a bunch of people that are writing and mocap acting and acting, and it's just this giant studio system that's developed for creative people, and like that's the coolest thing. I think that's so awesome that there's just a million more jobs in writing and making cool stuff now that the games have gotten up to the point where we need actors and dialogue.
Yep, those are all really good points. And that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from John in Bristol, UK. Let the questioning begin.
So not Cardiff, Bristol.
Right.
Okay.
Is there a prominent story in this game? To keep it relevant?
No.
Oh, a gameplay game.
Okay.
Is it a spooky game?
No. No.
Okay. I like how he thought about that. What do you think that means, Tom?
I think that people get spooked by all sorts of different things. I'm gonna keep it going on the train of thought. Is it a violent game?
Not by today's standards.
Okay.
Like by the literal definition of violence you could find, but nobody would, you know, bat an eye at it.
Yeah. Okay. That's like how
gratuitous violence.
Yeah, in the first Mario game in the manual, it says that every single brick in the game is a Mushroom Kingdom resident that Bowser's turned into a brick. So you're just, you know, you're murdering more than Nathan Drake, basically.
Right.
I feel like we got an extra clue in there.
Yeah, we did.
It's not Mortal Kombat.
At today's standards.
Yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and say, is this game from before 1995?
Yes.
Okay.
Did this come out on the NES?
Yes, that's fine.
Is it a licensed game?
Yes.
Nice. Good one. That's great to have.
I feel like we normally get a no on that one. Doesn't help narrow it down.
No. Oh, is this a good game?
It's okay.
I love how 20 questions has had two yes or no answers that have been better than yes or no.
It's like a six. In the old days, 6.5 or a 7 on the IGN scale.
You can't just go by the real scale?
What do you mean, like today's scale?
Yeah, I'm just kidding. So, license, it could be a Ninja Turtles game. Is this or based on a movie or cartoon? I don't know. I like narrowing those down sometimes. Is this based on a movie?
Yes.
Ooh. NES, so 80s movie.
Yeah.
And it just, so if you guys just think of every action movie that came out in the 80s, there's an NES game for it.
But that could still be TMNT.
It totally could. Yeah.
Tricky.
Was
Should
this
we try
game?
To narrow down?
Yeah. Is this a sci-fi game?
There are sci-fi elements.
Still, no yes or no.
But you probably wouldn't, like, if you're going to drop it into a, you know, genre category, probably wouldn't be sci-fi.
Okay. Do you play as a human?
No. That's 10.
That's what I was going to try to narrow down.
I'm going to be useless here because my knowledge base is SNES in terms of, like...
For sure, but just think of movies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably Willow or, you know, something was... I don't know. I'm trying to think. There's so many... There's just... He didn't say it's sci-fi, so that's what makes it interesting. There's, like, Karate Kid. That doesn't really have sci-fi elements.
Well, but you're not playing a human, so... That's probably where the questionable sci-fi element comes in, if I had to guess.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Staring at Damon's face to find a reaction. What's that, Tom?
ET counts as sci-fi.
What does?
Who? What?
T.
E.T.?
Oh, E.T. Yeah.
But yeah, okay. E.T. didn't come out on NES. Well, it did, actually, recently. It was recently ported by a fan. Or an indie developer. Named Kevin
that's really funny.
He's a friend of the show. He sent us games to play around with before. All right, let's do. Do you play as an animal?
Yes.
A movie where you play as an animal. Was this developed in Japan?
Yes.
Was it developed by Konami?
No.
You have one in mind?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, I see. So wait, it is an animal, though.
Yeah, you play as an animal. Okay. Based on, and it was a movie for sure, right?
Yes.
Okay. So not DuckTales, even though there was a DuckTales movie.
Yeah.
Was this developed by Capcom?
No.
Really?
I'm having a hard time thinking of movies featuring animals that would have also been video games.
Is this a kid's game?
I mean, it's an NES game.
Let me ask this. Was it based on a kid's movie?
That's kind of a gray area.
So it couldn't be like Lion King or something.
Yeah, that's what
exactly. Like certainly a kids movie.
We're gonna count that question, and I'm gonna say that it's based on a movie that was created a problem for some parents that took their kids to the movie.
Ooh. That's 15. So it was assumed to be a kids movie. By virtue of it being animated, maybe.
Yeah, is this an animated movie?
No.
Oh.
Oh.
So it might be a scary puppetry movie or something like that.
Uh-huh. Were there, like, Gremlins games?
Gremlins.
It. That's a good idea.
That's it. It's probably Gremlins 2, The Legend of Curly's Gold.
So specific.
Yeah, well, that's the Mind Palace working.
No, that's I was just joking. It's Gremlins. You guys got it. So there's a Gremlins 2 game, but I don't know if there's a Gremlins 1 game. Is this a sequel?
Is the game a sequel?
Is the game a sequel?
To another game?
No. This is based on a movie that's a sequel.
Yes.
Oh, so...
Okay. Is this Gremlins 2?
Yes.
Gremlins 2.
Who did you play as
Tom and Sam?
Your Gizmo.
Tom got that, right?
You play as Gizmo. Yeah.
I guess Gremlins, you narrowed it down to Gremlins 2.
Because I don't think there's a Gremlins 1.
There's not a Gremlins 1 game on NES.
So that's like Goonies. There's only a Goonies 2 on NES.
Yep. I feel like we got lucky with a lot of like gray area questions there.
Yeah.
Well, that was really cool that we got it down to a movie and then went through 80s movies. That was awesome and got one.
Yeah.
And then seriously. The Gremlins thing is really funny because I think parents were really freaked out when they took kids to that because there's like some horrible stuff in it, right?
Kind of. It's kind of a scary movie, actually, if you think about
original,
it.
the original Gremlins, along with a couple of the movies like Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Doom, Temple of Doom, are why they created the PG-13.
Yeah,
interesting. Yeah,
Temple of Doom has the heart rip out, and then Gremlins has, I mean, among other
things, lots of gore, like comical gore stuff. Like they put a gremlin in the microwave and it explodes.
Explodes,
yeah, things like that.
And then there's the horrible Santa Claus story. Why would they include that?
Yeah, yeah. Phoebe Cates tells a story about how her dad died. That's just like, it would be a pretty sad story for a kid to hear.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for the suggestion, John in Bristol, UK. Gremlins 2.
Wow.
An okay game. 6.5 or 7 on the old
engine. I hear it's good, and I don't own it. Yeah. So if anybody has a lead on Gremlins 2, I'd like to play that game.
See, if we could have gone to PAX West, probably could have found a copy.
That's what we would have picked up.
Yep.
There'll be a digital store, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Digital merch. We'll yeah.
That'd be cool.
All right. For when we're recording this, we're about 30 minutes out from EA Play. So we're going to go cover that now. And we'll talk about any fun announcements that come out of that next week. But that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Tom, for joining us. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. And we're out.
Dear stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.